When you break your arm, the X-ray shows this this jagged white line, right? And the doctor just points at it and says, you know, there it is.
Right, it's completely binary,
But
broken or not broken.
exactly. It's clean, it's visible, and it's categorized. But if you step into the world of enterprise cybersecurity, specifically identity governance, suddenly that X-ray machine is just, well, it's shattered.
Oh, absolutely. You are looking at a diagnostic landscape that is just entirely opaque.
Yeah, you're looking at things like who has access to the financial systems and like why do they have it?
And more importantly, should they still have it?
Right. It is this massive, just tangled web of permissions.
It's the absolute definition of diagnostic muddy waters. I mean, when you're dealing with a global enterprise, say 50,000 employees, thousands of contractors, hundreds of legacy applications, tracking those permissions manually, it's impossible.
Because the attack surface is constantly shifting.
Exactly. It's never
Yeah.
static.
Which brings us to our mission for today. We are decoding the bedrock of corporate cybersecurity, which is identity governance and administration.
A very heavy topic, but a
Ew.
crucial one.
Yeah, and our source material for this deep dive is a really comprehensive, heavily detailed SailPoint Identity IQ installation guide. And this was authored by SailPoint Masters in Hyderabad.
It's a phenomenal resource, honestly,
Yeah.
because it strips away all the fluffy marketing jargon and just lifts the hood on how these massive identity engines are actually constructed.
From the bare metal up.
Right, exactly.
Okay, let's unpack this. Because to the untrained eye, an installation guide sounds like a dry procedural manual.
Yeah, like something you'd just skim through.
Right, you think it's just, you know, click next, agree to the terms, wait for a progress bar to finish. But reading through this material, you realize it's actually blueprint.
A blueprint for survival, really.
Yeah, it's how massive enterprises lock down their most sensitive data. So we're going to guide you through the stakes, the architecture, and the hidden pitfalls of deploying enterprise identity security.
Basically, equipping you with a top-down understanding of this whole critical field.
Right, because you are laying the foundation for an organization's entire security and compliance posture.
Yeah, installing software of this magnitude is, I mean, it's a high-wire architectural endeavor.
It really is. So before a single WAR file even gets deployed, we have to look at the massive operational footprint this system is meant to carry.
The why before the how.
Exactly. To visualize what SailPoint Identity IQ actually does, I want you to think of it like the ultimate uncompromising bouncer at a massive corporate nightclub.
Okay, I like that analogy.
Right. But this bouncer doesn't just check IDs at the front door. They're actively plugged into your HR systems and your Active Directory.
So they know exactly who gets onto the general admission floor.
Yep, and more critically, who is allowed into the VIP rooms?
Ah, right. The proprietary code repositories, customer databases, the financial ledgers.
Exactly, and that bouncer operates strictly on role-based access control.
Meaning the junior marketing intern does not get the key card to the server room.
No exceptions, but, and here's the catch, if that bouncer's rulebook is flawed from day one.
Which happens more often than you'd think.
Yeah, like if the earpiece connecting them to HR is dropping packets, or if they're reading a guest list that was compiled incorrectly, the entire access model just fractures.
Everything falls apart. Everyone gets unauthorized access.
Or worse, your critical infrastructure teams get locked out during a crisis because the bouncer doesn't recognize them.
What's fascinating here is that an improperly installed identity environment literally inherits instability.
You don't just have a buggy application.
No, you have a compromised foundation. Identity IQ is the bedrock for meeting legally binding regulatory obligations.
We're talking big alphabets here, right?
Oh, massive. The Sarbanes-Oxley Act for financial accuracy, EPA for healthcare privacy, GDPR for European data protection, PCI DSS for credit cards.
In those frameworks, they don't mess around.
Not at all. They demand an immutable audit trail. You have to prove exactly who had access to specific data at any given millisecond.
So if the underlying database connections or like the application properties were misconfigured during step three of the installation,
Then that audit data might be quietly dropping records in the background.
which means when the regulators show up to audit your systems,
You're in deep trouble.
yep.
Discovering that your automated provisioning workflows are built on a wobbly base, that becomes a massive compliance liability.
Because our installation was a bit rushed, is Not really a legally defensible position.
Definitely not when you're facing astronomical fines for a data breach.
Yeah, that makes sense. So holding up that kind of flawless audit trail means you can't just, rent space on some multi-tenant cloud platform and just hope for the best.
Right, which leads us directly into the architecture, the blueprint itself.
Now, going through the guide, I have to admit, I wanted to push back a little on the infrastructure model here.
Oh, how so?
Well, we operate in a world that is just obsessed with pure SaaS, right? Software as a service.
Very true.
You open a browser, you pay a monthly subscription, and the software handles itself. But Identity IQ, according to the source, is heavily self-hosted.
It is, yeah. Either on-premises or infrastructure as a service.
Right. It requires an application server like Apache Tomcat. It's built on Java. And it demands a heavy-duty relational database like Oracle or Microsoft SQL Server.
It's a lot of moving parts.
It is. So, like, why take on this massive hardware and configuration overhead in the modern era?
Yeah.
Why not just buy a SaaS product?
It's a dilemma a lot of IT departments face, honestly. But the reality is that managing enterprise identities requires granular, hands-on control at the network and infrastructure level.
Control that SaaS just can't give you.
Pure SaaS platforms sometimes simply cannot provide it. I mean, think about it. When your organization relies on, say, 30-year-old AS400 mainframes.
Oh, wow. Yeah, those are still out there.
They are. Or if you have highly customized internal applications or strict data residency laws where your identity data legally cannot leave your sovereign borders.
Then you don't really have a choice.
Exactly. You must run the engine inside your own walls.
So you trade the convenience of the cloud for absolute administrative control.
Precisely. But owning the infrastructure means you have to build the engine to handle extreme loads.
Right. And the guide lays out the system requirements without any sugarcoating at all.
Oh, they are very clear. A sandbox environment for testing might survive on, like, 8 gigabytes of RAM and 2 virtual CPUs.
Which isn't too crazy?
No, but a production environment. Processing tens of thousands of identity cubes, you need a minimum of 16 gigabytes of RAM, 4 or more virtual CPUs, and highly optimized SSD storage.
Just to handle the relentless read and write operations of the audit logs, right?
Exactly. And before you even provision that hardware, the guide just hammers on the compatibility matrix.
Oh, man, the compatibility matrix. You can't just install the latest version of Java and call it a day.
No, no, no. The compatibility matrix is arguably the most critical preliminary step in enterprise software deployment.
You have to cross-reference everything.
Everything. The exact Identity IQ release with the specific Java Development Kit, or JDK, the Apache Tomcat version, and the exact database version.
So if you compile your Identity IQ instance on Java 11, but you try to run it on a server with Java 17,
the application might actually boot up fine at first.
Really?
Yeah, but internal cryptographic functions or API calls might quietly fail in the background.
So it's the equivalent of making sure the blood type perfectly matches before attempting a transfusion.
That is a great way to put it. A mismatch causes systemic rejection, often weeks later when you are under heavy load.
That's terrifying. But getting those perfectly matched components into the same data center is only step one, making them talk to each other without corrupting the data.
That is where the real traps are laid.
Let's dig into the installation minefield. Steps 3 and 4 in the guide cover the database creation and schema configuration.
Crucial steps.
And embedded in those instructions is this mandate to set the database character set and collation to UTF-8.
Ah, the character encoding trap. It catches so many deployment teams completely off guard.
Here's where it gets really interesting to me. Imagine building a massive, state-of-the-art corporate library.
Okay.
You spend millions on the architecture, the lighting, the custom shelving. But because of one tiny configuration error during the foundation pour, half the books on the shelves randomly translate themselves into unreadable, garbled wingdings.
Just absolute nonsense text.
Exactly. That is what ignoring the UTF-8 setting does to an identity database.
Because identity data is fundamentally human data.
Right.
In a multinational enterprise, your workforce has names with accents, louts, sedias, non-Latin characters.
And if your database collation isn't initialized to UTF-8, which is the universal standard for international characters,
the database physically does not know how to store those bytes.
So an employee named Jose Mueller gets ingested from the HR system, and the database just corrupts the string.
Yep. It saves it as, like, J Jealous question mark M ampersand driller.
Which breaks the entire identity life cycle.
Completely breaks it. Identity IQ relies on exact string matching and correlation rules to link an HR record with an Active Directory account.
So when the HR system pushes an update for Jose, the identity platform fails to find him.
Because it only knows the corrupted string. So provisioning halts, access is denied.
And trying to untangle and sanitize that corrupted database after the system has gone live across 10,000 users.
Oh, it is an absolute nightmare.
So you skip a single drop-down menu in the database setup, yeah. And your entire European and Latin American workforce effectively ceases to exist in the identity perimeter.
It underscores exactly why the database tier requires such precision.
And the connection between the application and that database is equally fragile, right?
Very much so. The deployment phase itself is tricky.
Yeah. The guide walks through placing the Identity IQ WAR file, the web application archive, into the Tomcat web apps directory.
But you also have to manually drop the JDBC driver into Tomcat's library.
And if you've ever been the engineer staring at a Tomcat error log at 2 a.m.,
you know exactly how painful a failed JDBC connection is.
It's the worst.
The Java database connectivity driver is the literal bridge between Tomcat and your database.
So if you use like an outdated MySQL connector JAR file.
Or if your connection pooling parameters in Tomcat's context.xml are misconfigured, the application will exhaust its connection pool.
So the system just hangs.
It just hangs, waiting infinitely for a database response that is never coming.
Which leaves your users staring at a spinning loading wheel while the server quietly chokes to death in the background.
This raises an important question about the security posture of the application the moment that database connection is finally successful.
Right, because once it's up, you have to log in. Which brings us to step 10 in the guide's workflow. The administrator account setup.
The default credentials.
The classic default credentials.
The platform ships with a default administrator username and password documented in plain text in the public manual.
Like admin and admin or something similar.
Exactly. And the guide explicitly mandates changing this password immediately and creating named administrative accounts for every single individual who requires elevated access.
Because if you just rely on a shared admin login and say a catastrophic change is made to an access policy,
but your audit logs will simply say admin made the change.
You have zero non-repudiation. You literally don't know if it was the senior engineer, a junior contractor, or a threat actor who scraped the default credentials off a random forum.
We have seen massive headline-making enterprise breaches originate simply because a sophisticated platform was stood up and the default admin credentials were left exposed to the internal network.
Just sitting there waiting to be exploited.
Precisely.
Okay, so let's say the software is installed. The database is reading international names flawlessly.
The defaults are burned.
The defaults are burned, and the JDBC drivers are pooling connections correctly.
Sounds perfect.
But an empty system is easy to run. The real test is when you have 10,000 employees logging in at 9 a.m. on a Monday, triggering thousands of automated lifecycle events.
Which brings us to tuning the engine.
Right, because a default installation will just collapse under enterprise load.
It will. You have to tune the Java Virtual Machine, or JVM.
I have seen environments absolutely grind to a halt because a deployment team left the default JVM heap flags in place.
Oh, yeah.
The guide specifically calls out tuning the -XMs and -XMX parameters to control garbage collection behavior.
Essential parameters.
So let's break down the mechanics of this. Like, why does garbage collection cause that cascading failure? Is the app just randomly throwing things away?
If we connect this to the bigger picture of how Java manages memory, it becomes very clear.
Okay.
The JVM heap is the pool of RAM strictly allocated to Identity IQ. Every time the system evaluates a user's role, generates a compliance report, or processes an HR file, it instantiates temporary Java objects in that heap memory.
So it's an active memory workspace.
Exactly. It's a workspace. But eventually, that workspace fills up with objects the application no longer needs.
Old reports, finished processes.
Right. So Java's garbage collection is the automated process of pausing the application, identifying unused objects, and sweeping them away to free up RAM.
But if your -XMX flag, which is your maximum heap size, is set too low for your identity volume,
the workspace fills up instantly.
And what happens then?
The JVM panics. It is forced to run what we call a full GC or stop the world garbage collection event.
Stop the world sounds bad.
It is bad. It completely freezes the Identity IQ application to aggressively reclaim memory.
So nobody can log in. No rules process.
Nothing. If the heap is severely undersized, these pauses happen continuously. The application freezes for 5 seconds, runs for 1 second, freezes for 10 seconds.
And finally.
Finally, it just crashes with a fatal out-of-memory error.
Wow. So sizing those JVM flags correctly ensures the garbage collector runs efficiently in the background without halting your enterprise workflows.
Exactly.
And when those workflows do fail, the guide points directly to the Log4j log files as your primary diagnostic tool.
They're always your first stop for troubleshooting.
But there's a delicate balance there too, isn't there? Like, if you turn on highly verbose logging to trace a stubborn bug and you forget to turn it off...
Oh, Log4j will write gigabytes of text data until it physically fills up the server's hard drive.
Crashing the entire machine.
It happens way more often than you would think. Managing your log rotation and logging levels is a critical part of the post-installation tuning.
Speaking of post-installation tools, the guide issues a very stark warning about SailPoint debug pages and bean shell scripting.
Yes, very important.
Bean shell allows administrators to write raw Java code to create highly customized rules and logic for the identity platform. But the guide insists that debug access must be tightly locked down in production environments.
It's non-negotiable.
Let's look at the actual risk there. Why is it so dangerous?
Well, bean shell is a double-edged sword. It executes directly within the IdentityIQ JVM environment with full application permissions.
Okay, so it has access to everything.
Right. It is incredibly powerful for writing a script that, for example, calculates a complex geographic risk score before granting someone access.
But on the flip side...
If an untrained admin or a malicious actor who manages deficient admin's credentials gets access to the debug pages, the damage they can do is instantaneous.
So, like, a disgruntled employee could write a 5-line bean shell script to intercept their own identity cube during a routine HR sync.
And just automatically append the domain admin's entitlement to their profile.
Oh, so they would bypass every managerial approval workflow.
Every segregation of duties policy. They would grant themselves god-level access across the entire corporate network in milliseconds.
Just by writing a quick script?
Yeah. Leaving bean shell or debug pages exposed in a production environment completely violates the principle of least privilege access.
It effectively hands the keys to the kingdom to anyone who can write a basic loop in Java.
Exactly.
Man, so what does this all mean for the people actually on the ground doing this work? Having survived this technical gauntlet from JVM tuning to bean shell risks, I want to zoom out and look at the human element.
It's a great perspective to take.
The guide notes that zero trust initiatives are a massive driver for the demand for platforms like IdentityIQ.
They absolutely are.
Now, I have to say, zero trust sounds incredibly pessimistic for a workplace culture, like you're putting a polygraph in the break room.
I know. It is a phenomenal security architecture, burdened with terrible marketing.
It really is. But technically, it's just an acknowledgement that the old model of a secure corporate network perimeter is dead.
It's long gone.
Okay.
In a hybrid cloud environment, your employees are accessing sensitive financial data from coffee shops, airport lounges, and unmanaged home networks.
You can't automatically trust a device or a user simply because they happen to have a corporate IP address.
No, identity is the new perimeter. Zero trust mandates that every single request for access must be continuously verified and authorized based on real-time context.
And IdentityIQ is the brain making those real-time decisions.
Exactly.
Which really explains why mastering this specific installation and configuration process is essentially a golden ticket in the identity and access management job market.
Oh, the demand for engineers who possess this deep architectural knowledge vastly outpaces the supply.
Because everyone needs it, but few people can actually build it.
Right. Global organizations, massive cybersecurity consultancies, they desperately need professionals who can independently stand up, tune, and secure these environments.
Because frankly, you cannot effectively troubleshoot a complex system if you don't know where the pipes are laid.
Exactly. A junior analyst can click around a polished web dashboard all day.
Sure.
But if Tomcat fails to initialize, or if the database collation is quietly corrupting HR data.
Or if the JVM is locked in that garbage collection death spiral we talked about.
A dashboard will not save you. You are entirely helpless unless you understand the foundational architecture we've dissected today.
That installation knowledge separates the standard users from the true engineers.
It absolutely does.
So, to bring it all together, deploying SailPoint Identity IQ is not just dropping a WAR file into a directory and crossing your fingers.
Not even close.
It is about constructing a highly scalable, legally defensible fortress to protect an organization's most sensitive access points.
It requires enforcing strict hardware compatibility,
untangling the mechanics of Java memory management,
and aggressively locking down administrative configurations before the first user ever logs in.
It is an incredibly complex discipline.
But it's deeply logical.
Yeah. Huh?
And when it's configured correctly, it operates as a completely seamless piece of enterprise engineering.
Well said.
But before we close out, I want to leave you with something to ponder.
Okay, let's hear it.
We spent this time analyzing how Identity IQ governs human employees and traditional applications, right?
Right. The bouncer checking human IDs.
Exactly. But look at the trajectory of the tech landscape today. Enterprises are rapidly deploying autonomous AI agents.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, large language models and automated bots that act on behalf of employees to, you know, read emails, execute financial trades, provision cloud infrastructure.
That drastically changes the threat model.
Completely. As these autonomous AI agents proliferate, how will identity platforms need to evolve?
Like, how do you even govern that?
Exactly. How do you govern, audit, and restrict the access of non-human, hyper-fast AI identities roaming your corporate network?
Because an AI agent does not have an HR record.
It doesn't take vacations.
Yep.
And if its logic is compromised, it can do more damage to your proprietary data in 5 seconds than a rogue human employee could accomplish in a year.
The VIP room is about to get flooded with robotic guests.
And the bouncer is going to need an entirely new set of rules to interrogate them.
That is a staggering thought.
The muddy waters of identity governance are only going to get deeper, and the stakes are going to get much, much higher.
Well, on that slightly terrifying but fascinating note, we are going to wrap up. Thank you for joining us on this deep dive into enterprise identity architecture. Keep questioning your defaults, double-check your compatibility matrices, and we'll catch you next time.